Today's show is sponsored by Public, the investing platform for those who take it seriously. On Public, you can build a multi-asset portfolio of stocks, bonds, options, crypto, and now generated assets, which allow you to turn any idea into an investable index with AI. It all starts with your prompt, from renewable energy companies with high free cash flow to semiconductor suppliers growing revenue over 20% year over year. You can literally type any prompt and put the AI to work. It screens thousands of stocks, builds a one-of-a-kind index, lets you backtest, and then you can invest in a few clicks. Generated assets are like ETFs with infinite possibilities. Customizable based on your thesis, not someone else's. Go to public.com/compound and earn an uncapped 1% bonus when you transfer your portfolio. That's public.com/compound, paid for by Public Investing. Full disclosure and podcast description.
This episode is sponsored by ClearBridge Investments, a manufacturing comeback combined with resilient consumer spending and the tailwinds of monetary and fiscal stimulus, confirm a healthy economic backdrop that should continue to support broadening equity leadership going forward. Position your investment portfolio for wider equity participation with fundamentally driven ClearBridge active equity strategies. ClearBridge, a Franklin Templeton company. Go to clearbridge.com to learn more.
Welcome to The Compound and Friends. All opinions expressed by Josh Brown, Michael Batnick, and their castmates are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Ritholtz Wealth Management. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any investment decisions. Clients of Ritholtz Wealth Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
You guys hyped for this or what? Let me hear it. Let's go. All right. This is my favorite part of Future Proof, where we get to bring our podcast to the live audience. We know a lot of you guys listen. Make some noise if you listen on Spotify. Let me hear. How about Apple Podcasts? Make some noise.
All right. FTX. I need to listen to it now.
Yeah, anyone listening on FTX? YouTube? All right. Well, this episode will be available on all three. It is my distinct pleasure to bring you guys a conversation with someone who is, I think, sitting in the most important seat in the industry right now. Rick Wurster has been president and CEO of the Charles Schwab Corporation and a member of its board of directors since January 1st, 2025. Previously, he served as president for more than 3 years, overseeing Schwab's client enterprises, wealth and asset management, banking and trust services, technology, and operations. Ladies and gentlemen, huge round of applause for our guest, Rick Wurster. You excited for this?
Well, Josh, I got to tell you, this is a career milestone today for a couple reasons.
Okay.
Number one, after that sizzle reel, to be following all those big names is humbling.
Okay.
And then second, as a Bostonian,
yeah,
I never, ever dreamed I'd be sitting on the stage in Miami Beach, someone in their Knicks gear here. So I'm trying to take that
Knicks
in for the
moment.
Knicks
and six.
His Knicks clothing is tattooed on. It can't come off. Guys, I want to set the table just by giving you a sense of the scale of Charles Schwab. And it is truly impressive in an industry and at an event. We have 1,700 companies here. Schwab truly stands head and shoulders above almost every company in financial services. $519 billion in core net new assets last year. Was that a record?
It was.
Close to it?
Yes, it was a big year for us. $519 billion we'll take.
Incredible. Total client accounts last year grew by 6% year over year. 46.5 million new client accounts were opened last year. 36% growth in managed investing net inflows, and 22% revenue growth versus the prior year, 2024. How much of the credit on the scale of 1 to 10 do you want to personally take for that?
Zero. It's my 32,000 colleagues, but mostly it's really, I want to pay tribute to the people in this room, which is,
okay. This
is a conference for advisors, and what I love about this industry is the way the advisors put the clients front and center.
Yes.
And I really believe in this industry, if you put the client at the front of everything that you do, you're going to have a successful business. So I chalk up all those great numbers to putting the client front and center, to supporting the growth of advisors. And if we continue to do that, I'm sure we'll put up more records in the future.
Let's talk about the advisor, the wealth management side. Wealth management assets alone at Charles Schwab were $5.2 trillion at the end of Q4, which is about 44% of all of the assets on the platform. And then last year, the retail business grew 33%, while the advisory side grew 42%. Was that surprising to you to see the pace of advised assets growing a little bit in excess of retail, or not necessarily?
Well, I think advisors are winning. Clients have spoken, and they love the fiduciary model. I always say there is a bull market for convenience. Clients in our country want ease. You see it in every aspect of their life, whether it's how they're ordering goods, how they're ordering dinner, how people are going to get to the Miami airport.
Right.
You know, it's a lot easier than it used to be. And I think the ease button in our industry is the RIA channel. And no one puts the client more front and center from an advisory standpoint than the RIA. So it's not surprising, because it's the confluence of being a fiduciary along with the convenience and expertise it's delivered. That's why we see such growth. And so in addition to the RIAs growing, we're taking share. And so that combination led to really strong growth in the advisor space last year.
I'm glad you said that you're taking share, because whenever I see these numbers, $1 billion a day into this or that, I'm like, where, like literally, where is the money coming from? So Josh mentioned this 42% growth in advisory assets. Is some of that coming over? You said the fiduciary model is winning. Is some of that coming over from the wire side? Is it some of it coming from people that finally decide they need an advisor? Like 42% on the asset size, that's a lot of money. Where is it coming from?
Yeah, I think there's a few sources of growth for us. Number one, last year was a big year for breakaways. And OpenArc, to me, was a watershed moment where you had a really big team breakaway from Merrill and, with the support of Dynasty, start a brand new business where all of a sudden now they've got lots of equity
in
that business.
That's the biggest breakaway ever.
Biggest breakaway ever.
Or so.
Yeah, and I think if you're a big team sitting inside one of these big firms and you look at OpenArc and the success they've had making that transition and the equity value that they now sit on, you've got to be thinking this might be a good option. So it was a big year for breakaways. It was a big year of organic growth for the RIAs. So we saw this community really grow at an accelerated rate. And then we took share, and we're growing at a nice clip. The way we measure, are we winning versus our competitors? We measure a transfer of asset ratio. We can see when an asset leaves us to another custodian, and we can see when assets come to us from other custodians. And we win over 2 times more from other custodians than leaves us. So we're winning in the marketplace, but it's really your success that's fueling our growth.
When you look at the asset flow back and forth between your competitors, does that bring you to do things in any different way? Or what is the main reason for following that data on a firm versus firm basis?
Well, one, we feel like no one has supported this community for the last 35 years the way we have. We are all in on supporting this community. And always have been. Number two, we think we can do the most for this community of any custodian, from a leading platform, great research and education, support if you need it on the tax, trust, estate, fixed income. If you need help with lending, right, your clients want to borrow, they can borrow through us. So we feel like we have the most comprehensive platform. But while we feel that way, we want to measure and make sure that we're winning. And so we look to the right statistics to make sure that we always want to win in this business, because your success matters so much to us.
Yeah.
What we get out of bed excited about every day is knowing that you are winning and we're playing a role in that. And so we like to measure, are we doing well?
I wanted to ask you, what are the things that Schwab does on the custody side for this wealth management community that you're most proud of? And what are those areas that you would say, I'm sure you would say all, but if you could zero in on a few, what are the areas where you think Schwab is unmatched versus everyone else in the space? Consider this like a focus group of current or potential customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love always getting feedback, so I love to hear from you if you feel differently. But I think number one thing that we are most proud of is that we get up every day with a singular mission of trying to make you all as successful as possible. Put the RIA front and center and the needs of your clients front and center. That's number one. Number two, we try to bring a comprehensive solution. We know you need a great platform. you may need technology. We've got more APIs than anyone else to plug into that we're bringing to you. We support you through consulting and education to help you market and grow your business. We've got a product platform that we think can't be rivaled. We've got alternatives. We've got experts we can get you on the phone with. So we try to, I think what has led to our success is that we have the most comprehensive offer in the market. And then finally, I think our growth in lending has been helpful because we know sitting in all of your shoes, you're competing against the Morgan Stanley person, the JP Morgan person, and they've got a great balance sheet they can leverage. And we don't want to have to make you go out to one of those banks and ask for a loan, because as soon as you do, that firm's going to want the wealth business. So we're increasingly trying to lean into the balance sheet side to do as much as we can to help you.
So you guys are ranked number one in total client assets, REA custodial assets, and daily average trades. But I know as a leader of a public company, you are not resting on your laurels. Is there, what I'm sure there is, what is the thing that you are most disappointed in that you are trying to provide better services that, for whatever reason, like, this is the thing that keeps needing improvement?
Well, we've got an aggressive agenda on a number of fronts. I think the thing that I would highlight were for our advisors that we're really leaning into is trying to make your lives as easy as possible. Our account openings now, something like around 80% go through digital channels. 5 years ago, that was a fraction of what it is today. And as a result, we've seen our client satisfaction scores. We ask for an easy score. How easy is it to do business with us? That's at an all-time high. I think these basics that are so important that you're doing 20, 30 times a day are so critical. And I think that's an area we're really leaning into to make sure we get right for you. If we can make your life easier serving your clients, we think we're going to be your custodial choice.
The question's going to get harder now.
I'm ready. Bring it on, Josh.
Okay. What would you say to an advisor in this audience who is currently shopping for a new relationship and they're looking at Schwab, but somewhere in the back of their head, did you hire this helicopter to drown me out? Because it's not going to work.
Are you going to talk about a competitor? Then yes.
What would you say to the advisor who has in the back of their head, Schwab is obviously incredible, the breadth of service, the size, the scale, the customer
brand.
Service, the brand, but am I placing assets with a firm that seeks to compete with me, whether it's directly or indirectly? What would be your response to the group here?
Number one, if you ever find yourself in a situation where we're competing for a client, send me an email or call me. I make that offer to RAs every time I see them.
What's your phone number?
Well, I'll tell you my email. This is a live podcast. I'll save it for the live audience, but no one ever calls, because when it comes down to an actual client situation, we have very clear rules of the road, and we preference the RIA in that, number one. Number two, collectively, we have a 14% share of the financial services landscape of retail wealth in our country, the RIAs and our retail business. There's 86% of the market we don't have that would be better served from someone in this audience or us serving them. So let's go after that together. We are all in on supporting your growth. Part of the reason why we've got a close to $400 billion now affiliate program where we've directed flows into our advisor network. Part of the reason why we have a strong marketing program, why we're out advertising about independence on CNBC and other channels. So we're trying to tell your story to help you win. We don't want to compete with you. And when we get into an individual situation where there is an issue, we stand down. Call me. Let us know. We are all in.
Getting away from
the
individual situation where there's a client in common, and I think we all understand that. Broadly speaking, clearly part of Schwab's growth is going to involve direct advice to consumers. And I'm sure, like everything else you do, you'll do a great job with that. I think that's more of the thing that I think people, I don't want to say are worried about, but that's probably the answer that most of the people in the audience would love to hear from you.
Yeah, I think when you think about one of our clients that goes into a wealth solution at Schwab, that relationship generally is cultivated over 10, 20, 30 years. They come to Schwab typically as a self-directed client.
Right.
Their financial life becomes more complex, and they come into us and say, hey, what do I do now? I have more money than I thought I'd have. I've got a more complex financial life than I thought they'd have. And they love Schwab, and they've been with us for 20 years. That's the client we serve with wealth. What you don't see us doing is going out and directly trying to win the wealth client into Schwab like an RIA does. Okay. And I think that's an important distinction. We have an important wealth business that absolutely we're trying to grow, but we're using it to serve our existing Schwab clients. We've got $6.5 trillion of retail client assets sitting on our platform, many of whom would be better off served by having more comprehensive advice.
We agree on that.
You recently doubled the asset minimum for companies that are in the referral program to $500 million, and you increased the threshold. It used to be you needed to have $500,000 to make that referral. Now you increased it to $2 million. Why did you do that?
It's a little bit like if anyone loves to play golf here, then when you redesign a golf course, you try to bring it back to the original intention of the designer. Maybe the trees have grown in a little bit too much. You need to cut them back. Maybe there's more trees than they used to be, so the greens aren't getting as much sun or wind as they need to thrive. And I'd say that's what we did with our sand program. We thought, what is best for our clients? And what do we need to do in order to make this successful? When we started the program, $500,000 was a lot different then than it is now. And so we really were adjusting the program for the asset growth that we've seen and for the distinctiveness that we think our advisors can bring to the program. What we see amongst the RIAs in this audience and the RIAs that we support, they are really distinctive at all wealth levels, but particularly distinctive relative to what we can offer as wealth levels go up. And so we really are trying to focus the program on that. The second thing is, the growth has really, of that program has accelerated. 2 years ago, we had referrals of around $14 billion. Last year, we had referrals of around $38 billion. So in 2 years, it had gone up quite a bit. And so we want to make sure the program grows in a reasonable way. The final point I would make is that this gets a lot of attention, this referral program. Less than half of 1% participates in the referral program. And six firms out of the 16,200 firms that we support and whose businesses we try to make a difference in, there's about six firms that gather more than $1 billion in that program.
That announcement got a lot of media attention, financial media attention. Was there one thing or anything that you felt was misreported or misrepresented within this announcement?
Well, I hope not. I think what we were trying to do is really do something that made sense for clients, which is focus the RIA in on the clients that they can be the most impactful for and grow the program in a responsible way. So I didn't see all the media attention, but we feel good about the actions that we made. We do want to serve clients that have been clients of Schwab for 10, 15, 20 years. Absolutely, we want to be able to provide wealth services to them. At the same time, we couldn't be more supportive of the 16,000 advisors that we serve and their growth.
I guess dialing up the heat a little bit, because this is tricky. Because you
we're Knicks Celtics, bring it on.
But you keep saying the client, and yes, the end client is your client, and we're also your client, and that's a hard thing to balance, is it not?
I don't think it's a hard thing to balance at all. We've done it every day for 35 years. We've supported the needs of retail investors for 50 years. I don't think we've gotten to over $12 trillion of assets roughly split between our two businesses.
I told you.
Yeah, you were right.
By not putting the best of interests of both at the forefront. It is very rare where we come across a situation where we're in conflict. And I think if the RIAs that work with us, I think they know how much we care about their success and how much you've seen this industry flourish. And I would like to think we've been a part of making that happen.
Rick, we live in an age of mega RIAs. Some would say, in some cases, I would not say this. Some would say, in some cases, it's hilarious to watch a bunch of breakaway brokers 15 years later rebuild the wirehouses they came from, but just change up the cap table. So now they're the owners. It's a little bit Animal Farm, a little Orwellian to see some of the revolutionaries now become the thing that they rebelled against. But be that as it may, it's just the reality of the industry. When Schwab looks at the landscape and sees $600 billion RIAs that frankly raised a lot of their first $10 billion through the referral program, is there any regret? Or are you proud of them and happy to continue to support them? Like, what is the dynamic with such gigantic firms that they now can almost dictate terms to all of their partners if they so chose?
I'd say incredible pride in the fact that they've gotten to be that big and that successful. If you come back to our mission as a company, our goal is to help the end investor be as financially successful as they can be. Everything we do, from our platforms to our research, our education, our service, our support, everything is built around trying to make the end investor successful and live their best financial life. And so to see firms that have flourished through the independent model and are making a huge difference, like this entire audience, in the lives of their clients, that's incredibly gratifying, because we do feel like we've played a part in that. And ultimately, people are living better financial lives as a result.
I wish I brought this chart. My bad, I didn't. I've used this in the past. I just thought it was so emblematic of the environment that we're in. So in 2022, Schwab's market cap was 22 times the size of Robinhood. And recently, that fell to 1.2 in October. And I think that was a little bit ridiculous, no disrespect to Robinhood, but that kind of that felt nuts, that you guys are almost at parity. Now, last time I checked, you were back up to 2.4 times the size, but there is a lot of competition. It is not just you and the other one anymore. Like, there is a lot of competition. So how are you thinking about staying ahead of the curve, investing appropriately, not over-investing? We haven't seen a cycle, we haven't seen a downturn in a while. So how are you thinking about the services, the competition, all that sort of stuff?
I think you asked about Robinhood. I think we're $12 trillion. I think there's something like $300, $350 billion. So I think we're more like 30 times the size of them.
I meant the market cap.
I understand. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that for the audience. The second thing I'd say is that I don't particularly consider them to be a competitor, and that's not because of their size and I'm dismissing them. I think they're in a different business than we are. They're more of a transactional business. Try to get people into the casino, get them to transact, get them into these prediction markets. We're in the outcomes business. We're in a business of making you successful. We're in the business of making your end clients successful through you. And we're in the business of making our retail investors successful. So when I think what we need to do to stay apart from the competition, it's stay focused on what's going to drive long-term results for our investors and how are they going to be successful. If they do that and they're thriving, they're going to stay with Schwab and they're going to be a part of us.
To that point, one-third of your new client onboards last year were Gen Z. I don't think everyone understands that or gives you guys enough credit for that. The average age of a Schwab client has fallen by 10 years. It's now a mid-40s demographic. And that flies in the face of some of the narrative out there that every young investor is defaulting to one app, and it's not Schwab. You guys are proving it's the opposite. So what I want to ask you is, you guys are obviously winning market share amongst Gen Z, amongst this new class of investor. Do you want to talk about that strategy that's enabling you to compete there and still remain differentiated and not open a casino, so to speak? Do you want to talk about how you thread that needle?
Yeah, we're crushing it with the young investor. And the reason we're crushing it with them is because we've got the combination of the platforms. We've got Thinkorswim, which I think is the leading trading platform. Great charting. I know you both love charts. It's best charts on Thinkorswim, I think. It's also more simpler trading venues if you want to trade on Schwab.com or in our mobile app. There's a trading venue for everybody at Schwab. There's research and education. That young investor that's looking to place their first options trade, we've got 1,000 ex-traders that wake up every day ready to answer the phone for that investor to walk them through how to place that first options trade. We've got service. We answered the phone for advisors on average last year in an average of 9 seconds.
Wow.
For the retail investor,
well,
it was 26
New
seconds.
That's too long. we need a walkie-talkie.
That's two rings, just for the record.
Okay.
So we've got that combination. I think one of the mischaracterizations of Gen Z is that they're all looking to go to the casino and try to make money fast. And certainly there are a number of Gen Z who are doing that, but there's also a lot of thoughtful Gen Z investors, and they're coming to Schwab. We're the most followed financial services firm on YouTube, and that's where they go to learn how to do anything, invest, change a tire on a bike. I mean, that's where they go, and they're finding us, and they're gravitating to Schwab. One-third of our financial plans that we did last year for clients were for people under the age of 40.
Is part of your agenda, is part of your agenda to make sure, or do you maybe you don't care, but I was thinking, given that's those stats, do you want to be more vocal in the media about the fact that you are winning Gen Z? Or do you just let the results speak for themselves and not worry about the prevailing narrative?
I do think we try to be vocal. I think one of the things that I've personally tried to be vocal on is the difference between investing and gambling. What I worry about, I don't worry about the success of some competitors who are doing well with young investors. That's fine. I want young investors to get invested, to make money, to make investing a part of their life, like it is a part of your life. Think how much investing has done for each of your lives. And if we could get every young investor come out of college or in college to begin to think that way, it would make a huge difference. But what I worry most about is that the message some are getting is, hey, the way to win is come bet on the 10-game parlay of football this weekend. You know, maybe buy a little crypto and off you go.
Can we pause on that? I think you took out a full-page ad in a newspaper saying something to the effect of that's the difference between gambling and investing. Or so was that you guys? Or do I have that wrong?
I think you're thinking of public.com.
Oh, that was
they
public.
Said, come,
okay.
Don't find something about don't find your bookie, come to us or something. I know the ad you're talking
wealth
about.
Wealth isn't won in a bet or something to that effect.
But we would agree with that kind of message.
Yeah. I was going to say, you guys did not jump all in on the circus when the circus was in town in 2021. You guys sort of seemed to just stay the course, and that ended up making you look very good in the aftermath.
Yeah, I think I want to be clear. We have a lot of active traders that come to Schwab because we've got the best platform, education, research in the industry. And so we support active traders. But there's a difference between being an active trader, looking at the charts, looking at the fundamentals, having a point of view on a company, having a game plan for what you're going to do when things change, and again, betting on what the first song Bad Bunny's going to sing is.
Yeah. So one of the main differences between the actual casino and the stock market is, you could treat the stock market like a casino. You could roll the dice 30 trades a day. It's free. You could do that if you want. But the key difference is the longer you stay inside the stock market, the more likely you are to win. Where obviously at the casino, it's the exact opposite. One of the things that has, I think a lot of the people are frankly drunk on prediction markets. I understand why there's been a lot of early success. I understand. Well, listen, is 80% of it sports betting at this point? Are you guys going to, and ever is a long time, is that on the roadmap, prediction markets?
I'd break prediction markets. And by the way, it's 90% plus sports gambling. There's three parts of prediction markets to me. Number one is the information you get from the odds embedded into different events happening. I think that's useful information for investors. So at some point, we may display that at Schwab. What's the likelihood of the inflation report being hot? Like investors might want to know that.
You would display it, but not necessarily offer bets on it.
Well, the second part of prediction markets to me and how they started was on financial related events. You want to take, you want to buy
the Fed.
What's the Fed going to do? What are mortgage rates going to do if you're going to buy a house? Maybe you want to hedge yourself. That's how they got started. And then the election came along and volume went through the roof and they said, how do we replicate this? And then they got into the third part of prediction markets, which is all sports. And that's where all the volume is. So I think as we think about those three parts of prediction markets, the information I think is relevant and we'll make available. Financial predictions at some point we may do. And sports we really want to stay away from because, again, if you our entire mission of our company, the reason all 33,000 people get out of bed every day is to make people better off in their financial life.
So here's what I like about prediction markets. I do believe that there is wisdom in crowds.
He's such a junkie.
No, listen. Well, yes, I am. Guilty as charged. I do believe that there is wisdom in crowds. And so, for example, if you were able to, because surveys are nonsense, because right, there's no stakes. So if people are able to put their money where their mouth is, and say, for example, so the Citrini research report a couple of weeks ago, will unemployment be over 10% by 2028? If no was at 97 cents, I would feel a lot better. If that was an active contract that you can monitor, I would look at it. If there was a way for investors to get, so investors can't get access to SpaceX, right? All of these exciting companies where getting into SPVs and SPVs, it's nonsense, right? We all understand that. But what if there was a market where will SpaceX IPO at a $400 billion or $1 trillion valuation or whatever it was? Things like that where you can harness wisdom of crowds where it's not insider information, I think there's value there.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I agree. The only part I would disagree with, if you want SpaceX shares, go to Forge.com. We just bought them. And by the way, we are going to roll out their capabilities first to advisors before we bring it to retail.
Hang on, you can't get SpaceX on Forge. Come on.
They've had SpaceX
for the audience. Forge, similar to Equities N, which Morgan Stanley bought. These are platforms that allow people to buy and sell pre-IPO startup-backed, venture capital-backed companies.
Somewhat similar. I think Forge is 3 to 4 times bigger, number one. Number two, they're much bigger in direct shares. So Equities N has a strong position in SPVs, whereas Forge is offering actual shares more.
Okay. So private markets has been a thing, obviously, and we keep hearing from the suppliers of the private markets that there is so much end user demand. You are in a much better position than I am to say, is that true? Is there actually clients that really want, whether it's infrastructure or private companies or whatever, how much demand is actually there?
I think there's demand. There's a long education cycle as it relates to alternatives, as you likely know in working with your clients. We launched to retail an alternatives platform about 18 months ago. And what we have found is that the sales cycle, in order to introduce a client to it, to have them talk to one of our alternatives experts, it takes a long time. And so I think people need to be pragmatic about how long it's going to take for alternatives really to grow in retail. But I think it's great that they have the option. Over time, you should think that alternatives should deliver attractive risk-adjusted returns and be diversifying. And so in someone's portfolio, it could be additive.
I want to talk about another competitor coming in at the high end of the market. Goldman Sachs, very interested in RIA custody now. I get the calls and the emails, as I'm sure a lot of people in the audience does. Does that change any of your plans for how you want to help advisors service the ultra high-end client that they currently work with at Schwab today? You guys look at that and say, you know what, this is good. It actually validates the opportunity. What's your mentality around a player like a Goldman entering?
Well, number one, I think we always want to affirm why we're in this industry, which is to drive your success. This isn't about us. We're not trying to put product into RIAs. The only thing we are doing is trying to bring all of our energy to make RIAs successful. So I think that's the starting point. Number two, in order to have the market share that we have and the growth that we have, we've got to be great at every segment. And so I think that if there's a gap in the ultra high net worth segment, we're going to close it. I mean, I haven't necessarily heard that. I think some esoteric lending capabilities, sometimes I hear the need for that. Maybe that's something Goldman will offer. But if it's about product, like you can get Goldman product as an RIA at Schwab.
Right.
The last thing I would say about competition generally in this industry is there's been a lot of tries to compete with us. But the challenge is with our size and scale and the economic model, which is we don't charge for custody, it's really hard for new entrants to gain traction. And if you're one of these big firms that Robinhood bought Trade PMR, they got to be looking at the economics of this saying, why are we doing this? I mean, they make their average revenue on a client assets 1.6, 1.7%. We make 10 basis points in our advisor business. It's a thin margin business, and that's at our scale, $5.5 trillion. So listen, we welcome all competition because ultimately it makes us better and makes the end investor better off. But I think as people enter, they've got to realize it's not easy.
So a Robinhood entering, they're coming into a business with lower margins than their bread and butter business.
Without a doubt. I mean, I think you look at their revenue and divide it by their client assets, it's something like 1 point. So they earn $1.60 out of every $100.
This is a 10 and 20 cent business they're coming
into. We earn 10 cents on average with $5.5 trillion of client assets.
Right.
So that's with far more scale than anyone else. So it's hard for competitors to enter and be successful, which is why we've seen a lot try, but then they go away. And I understand, I have a lot of respect for Goldman and I'm friendly with John and David and, I understand. I think they're an asset manager, they're a wealth manager, they want to get their product out there, and so it makes sense. But ultimately, I don't see them as a core competitor in the basics of the custodial business.
Let's talk about AI. So in your latest earnings report, you said that you've got 220 plus artificial intelligence use cases. I'm curious, not just for what you're seeing in the wealth space, but also what are you using internally to drive efficiencies?
Yeah, AI is going to be huge. I think it's going to change things in our industry. It's going to change the way clients interact. We're using it in a, I'll describe a few ways we're using it today. Number one, we're using it to make our professionals more efficient. So when any of you call an advisor now, that call is being recorded. Where we used to spot check calls and provide coaching to our professionals, now we have AI that reads every transcript, surfaces opportunities to coach our people. So we're making our people more efficient.
How long did it take you to
effective.
Implement something like that?
That was quick. Yeah. And it's quick because we rely on external providers. I mean, one of the things, Josh, I know you and I have talked about is how there was that report on AI and how it hurt our stock and other stocks.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
But what people don't realize is we love the innovation in AI because that means we put it on our platform and bring it to you. And yeah. We're leveraging all that stuff ourselves. So AI is making us more efficient in operating the business and answering phone calls. It will also change the way we interact with clients. There's no question that in 5 years, we're likely to have an agentic experience where you're coming on to SAC.com, SchwabAdvisorCenter.com, and you're speaking to something and getting your task done. Or the way we deliver tax, trust, and estate information is changing now. We bought an ownership stake in Wealth.com, which is an AI firm that delivers trust using AI. All this stuff is revolutionary and making a big difference. It's going to allow us to serve clients in a different way.
Were you surprised by the reaction in the stock market to some of the announcements coming out of both competitors within the wealth tech space, but just Anthropic in general, and watching the share price movements in gigantic corporations like Schwab? Did that catch you by surprise? And what do you remember from that moment? Because it probably wasn't your favorite day of 2026.
Well, the reaction was surprising to me.
Me too.
Yeah, I looked at it and said, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Well, just the magnitude didn't make sense. I mean, we are ultimately someone that brings technology to our clients. We want technology innovation. So if there's a tax planning capability that's driven by AI that's great for clients, outstanding. That's not going to hurt our business. That's going to help our business. So the idea that there was this tax capability out there and that was going to undermine our business, it's fundamentally flawed because it's going to do nothing but help our business. So I think we're going to be a beneficiary of AI. We have the size and scale to make the investments to win. We know the RIAs are going to need to adapt to AI and use it to power their business and power their success. We also know you're going to be competing against agentic advisors in the future. And we think we have the size and scale to be able to deliver all of that to you, to make you successful in an AI world. That doesn't mean we have to build every piece of AI capability ourselves. It just means we need to bring it to you to empower you to succeed.
I wanted to ask you, I think this is definitely relevant for people in the audience. You were asked about this on the call, on your earnings call, about the tax-advantaged long-short strategies. And Fidelity paused the onboarding, I think, in December, and it doesn't sound like it's unpausing anytime soon. That's a big and growing part of our business.
These are the 130-30 funds.
Yeah, so are you, yeah, the long short extensions that I think drive a lot of value for clients. What's your plans there?
We are seeing tremendous growth in that area through all of you. I mean, all of you are seeing a lot of growth and it's coming to us because there's not really anyone else that can support it.
You're not going to rug us, are you?
No. No, I think that, you know, we benefit from the fact that we've got a big balance sheet. We're a public company, we can access markets. And so we can support the balance sheet growth that supports the leverage behind the strategy. So we are supportive of it. And you can see why it makes a ton of sense and why I think it's going to continue to grow. I'll speak to our retail business for a moment. We have 70% of our retail clients that have a large concentrated position. And I'm sure a lot of your clients have benefited from single stocks that have gone well above where they expected. So they're sitting on these enormous gains. This portfolio makes a ton of sense. We're going to support it. And I just want everyone in this audience to know that's an RIA. Bring your new assets to us. We'd love to support you.
Good answer.
I want to close with some career stuff for the people listening at home and the people in the audience here, and maybe industry specific, but maybe just generally. You must be in the midst of as many conversations as I am about the future of work, the future of the advice business, the future of the human advisor within the advice business. What are you thinking? What are you telling people? What are you hearing on this disruption theme? which clearly is the predominant cause of both excitement and anxiety, I would say, in our industry in 2026.
Well, I think you've got to embrace it, number one.
You know, I'm trying to embrace it, but then I get nervous again.
But I think you got to embrace AI, and it's just like the internet. The internet was coming along. If you didn't like it, you couldn't stop it. And if you were in a business that was going to be hurt by it, didn't matter what you felt about it, you were going to be hurt by it. And so I think you've got to embrace it. Number two, you've got to have a strategy for it. I think there's going to be lots of ways that you can use AI to build your business.
What would you be doing then? What the strategy? You're an RIA founder, have a few advisor employees, couple of billion dollars. What would be your formulation of an AI ready plan for that person?
Okay, number one, I would be getting rid of a lot of the manual work that supports every part of the value chain of being an
advisor. Rick said fire all of your staff.
Well, no, I want to be clear. I didn't say that.
No, he didn't say
that. What I mean is, like, trust, tax, and estate work. You want to get your trust done today. You go out to an attorney, you spend thousands and thousands of dollars, takes lots of time. We use, with our clients, something called Wealth.com. It's completely driven by AI.
Yeah,
it's a great product.
Shout out to Wealth.com.
And that's going to be true across planning, research, tax, trust, estates, investing, rebalancing. Every part will have an AI component. And if I was an advisor, I'd be thinking about how to get that in my technology stack, and then how to direct my people to the really important role an advisor plays about maintaining the relationship, being there for clients, working with them through the emotional part of investing, because that's incredibly valuable. When you see the market tank, your client comes in and says, I want to sell everything, that's the moment where you shine. Maybe you'll be able to differentiate yourself on planning in the future, but it's probably going to be driven by AI. You might as well embrace it. Focus on the relationship, focus on the emotions. And then I would be using it offensively, because all of you likely work with wealthy clients because it scales your business. It makes sense. I think AI is going to provide the ability for you to start with clients younger and at lower wealth levels that will ultimately become your wealthier clients that need more handholding as their life becomes more complex. So I'd be embracing it from an offensive standpoint.
Are advisors ultimately going to be displaced by AI?
I think there will be AI wealth advisors, and we all need to recognize that, plan for that, and have a strategy for how to address that, number one.
Wait, what do you mean AI wealth advisors? Like literally robots that look like humans, or what do you mean?
Agentic wealth management where the
client is
interacting with...
Yeah, Josh did a great job. He's on TV all the time. He's better spoken than I am. Maybe just handsomer, I don't know.
But I think
there will be advisors... Yeah, advisors that you're just dealing with on your computer where there's not a personal. But no different, by the way, than robo-advising. And robo-advising has not displaced the growth of the RIA. I think we're the biggest robo in the world, yeah. And we've got $100 billion. We've got $5.5 trillion on our RIA platform. But there will be, I think, some people that just want to deal with the agentic experience, particularly when they're young and their life is less complex. But that's going to change. But I think that's the opportunity. If you could build an agentic experience, get clients younger, less wealthy, some of those are going to become the big clients that you're getting today. And I think making that transition and having that capability ready is going to be important.
That's pretty much exactly what I think. So we're on the same page in that regard. I think firms are going to be more open-minded to working with younger clients at lower minimums, because so much of that process will be automated. So I completely agree. Guys, round of applause for Rick Werster. All right, Nicole will kill me if I don't let you know that idontshop.com is the official Compound merchandise store. If you don't catch a t-shirt, Rick, you going to throw some shirts with us?
Absolutely. All right. You got a good arm.
If you don't catch one, you can go there and grab one. You guys have been amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. Give yourselves a round of applause. Thank you. We love you.